feel an expansion in your body, and then just sink into that space as if you're like resting in the arms of your divinity, the arms of your goddess, the arms of your god, your twin flame. All that energy is rest in that space connected to the heart field. So that's the quickest way to I can give you, and maybe we can connect again in another way. Okay? Yes. Thank you.
Already. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night. We have to say good night and make room for Hour of the Wolf. I thank you all for joining us. We're going to go out with Sinead O'Connor in this heart. Any last thoughts? Good night.
Good night.
This heart lies for you.
There are rays on.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. Well, I am proud as punch. I am pleased as, well, whatever I can be pleased by. Our guest this morning is...
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. In director Jeff Nichols' 2011 film Take Shelter, Michael Shannon played a loving father and ordinary blue-collar worker who suddenly becomes obsessed with a premonition of a massive apocalyptic storm.
Okay, I have to pause this because I was going to introduce Dan's review. Everybody wants to know what the latest skiffy, tentpole, big-budget movie is. And so I was going to say, Dan Persons reviews the best movies for Hour of the Wolf. Therefore, we will not be discussing Batman versus Superman.
The film becomes an inquest into the nature of faith, of the dangers one faces in a devotion to the intangible, risking even the people one is striving to protect. It is, frankly, a powerful, spellbinding film, well worth seeking out. Nichols' newest film, Midnight Special, is a spiritual sequel, no pun intended, to Take Shelter. Michael Shannon is back as Prophet of Doom, but where Take Shelter played the ambiguities in his relation to forces beyond human experience to great effect, Midnight Special leaves no doubt and is a lesser exercise as a result. Shannon again plays a father who, with the help of a childhood friend played by Joel Egerton, flees a religious cult with his young son, played by Jaden Lieberer. Is this just any child? No, of course he isn't. He randomly channels coded government radio signals, wears goggles to protect those around him from his literally laser-like gaze, and has to be sheltered from daylight lest the earth move, again, quite literally. And as the fugitives are pursued across the South by cult members and the combined security forces of the U.S., it becomes patently obvious that the boy is meant to be something more than just a strange, energy-channeling mutant. He is meant to represent something greater, something beyond human understanding. Midnight Special treads some well-worn paths, specifically those traveled by such films as Close Encounters of the Third Kind, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, and Starman. But where those films kept their religious themes as subtext, Midnight Special makes them blatantly text. Take Shelter ended on a sequence meant to question whether the father's fears might actually be justified, and in the process made the film's themes indelible. Midnight Special answers the question definitively, with a closing sequence meant to inspire awe, but that instead takes the air out of the journey through its overt literalness. Director Nichols has genuine strengths. His use of Shannon manages to uncover a tenderness beneath the actor's imposing presence, and the moments when the boy's powers are unleashed have a visceral impact that blockbusters with far larger budgets struggle to attain. but where filmmakers like Spielberg and Carpenter were able to craft stories that brought their themes down to scale by channeling them through the perspective of their characters, the stoicism of Midnight Special's participants gives us nothing but the message to hold on to. The film is admirable in trying to make this all mean something more than just apocalypse for apocalypse's sake, but in the end, Midnight Special still disappoints. The new Greek fantasy, The Winter, is all about ambiguity. A young and unsuccessful writer living in London decides to flee the collection agencies pursuing him and return to the home his father lived in a small village in Greece. Going through the dilapidated building, the writer discovers clues to his father's mysterious death and more than a few specters who have taken up residence in the moldering rooms. This is the directing debut of special effects artist Konstantinos Koutsoliotis, and it is as much an exercise in atmosphere as storytelling. There's a beautiful animated sequence to illustrate the father's odyssey through a mystical night world, and overall, this plays like a more introspective take on The Shining, with the building doing its level best to claim the unwitting soul that has dared enter it. As in many ghost stories, The Winter uses the supernatural to suggest the past's inescapable grip on the present, but there are also mysteries here beyond rational explanation, but that are still beautiful to behold. I'm Dan Persons. Now is the time when we must make our stand. Speak out against hatred, speak out against fear, speak out against greed, speak out against Trump.
Speak out against Trump. What, are you pro-woman or something? Jeez. You know, one of these days he's going to do that, and I'm going to segue with Frank Zappa's It Can't Happen Here, because that's the relevant song. You know, it's beyond SF. It's beyond horror stories. So as soon as I figure out which mic is yours, say something.
Something.
No, that wasn't it. Let's try that again. Here, and just turn them all on.
Something.
Oh, yes, you're on one of them.
I'm on this one.
Yeah, okay. Say it again.
Something.
Okay, we got it.
Woo!
Process of elimination. Nice. Open four mics, and when I can actually hear you in the headphones... That must be the one. I don't have a VU meter. I don't have something I can look at. My headphones barely register because they're afraid that they will feed back if you make them too loud, which they will. But what of that? Let's see. I had announcements to make. Oh, my God. Do I have an announcement to make? Okay, number one. This is the last day to vote for the Hugo Awards. You have until midnight tonight, March 31st, and you don't have to be an attending member. You can just pay some money. Last year was $45, and this year probably similar. And vote your conscience. And it's very important to do this because... For the second time in history, people forget the first time that there was an attempt by a certain organization in California that was created by a certain science fiction writer who wrote under the name René Lafayette, was better known as L. Ron Hubbard, who bought blocks and blocks of voting memberships in the Hugos and tried to get all members of Writers of the Future nominated and win. They tried to buy the thing. The thing is, they bought them all in paying with checks that all had sequential serial numbers. So they were caught. And it's almost too bad because I have to admit that any number of the Writers of the Future's writers are actually pretty good. I know excellent people who've been guests on this show. I just refuse to cooperate when they're publicists say, and I swear this is the language. Hi, guy, we understand that you're into sci-fi. We have somebody for you. Next. But then it turns out that, you know, then I read that person's story like, ooh, well, this was good. So there's another organization, two organizations, one which is simply a bunch of sad people who want science fiction the way it was written in the 40s and 50s. And I happen to agree with some of their choices, but I don't think that people should vote a slate. And many of the things, by the way, that they promote have one or two votes. It's not like they're really pushing it. But then there is this extreme right-wing publishing company owned by a pseudonym, Vox Dei, who wants everybody to vote for his people. And last year, he succeeded in he runs a little slate called The Rabbit Puppies. Yeah. And managed not to win anything. What he managed to do was to get so many nominations that good people were blocked out, and many awards, thank God the Hugos, have a category, no award. So consider voting for the Hugo Awards. It will cost you money. It's not free. You can, if you haven't read everything, don't vote in that category. Or Google around and look at people you trust, whose opinions you like. They're not necessarily John Scalzi. And although I agree with some of his stuff, but the point is, look around. Oh, and also you get to vote for the 1941 Hugos, because there were no Hugos Awards in 1941. And that's inevitable, that it's either Heinlein or Hubbard who are going to win, because they are the only people who were really writing important stuff in 41. So that's announcement number one. It means nothing. Number two. You hear that snap of that piece of paper? I'm going to hold it up to the microphone. That means this is important. Tuesday, April 5th. Actually, go back the first Tuesday in November. Our reader was Brooke Bolander. This time, it's a launch party for a really exciting, very cool anthology called Clockwork Phoenix 5. There have been four before. I guess they come out approximately every 2 years. Give or take. The editor, Mike Allen, themes them. He has his own press, Mythic Delirium Press, but he has really wonderful people, and I have very, very long biographies of them. But you should go online and read them. What you should know is that the people who will be reading are Rob Cameron, Claire Cooney, or CSE Cooney is her actual byline, Carlos Hernandez, who was on this program, what, about 6 weeks ago, and read for us about a year and a half ago, Barbara Krasnoff, who read at the Nursif readings a month and a half ago, I guess. No, 2 months ago. What am I saying? 2 months ago or last month? She's with Rick Bowes.
Might have been a month ago.
A month ago?
Might have been, yeah.
Barbara had a month?
Yeah.
No, two months ago.
Two?
Yeah, she wouldn't be 2 months in a row. I would have seen to that. Yeah, so, no, she was February.
This year's passing really fast.
Yeah, it really has been. And since the story that she read is from Clockwork Phoenix, she's... I'll have to ask her what she's going to read. Each person's going to do 15 to 20 minutes. Then Sonia Taffe, it is pronounced T-A-A-F-F-E, but I have made sure because this is the radio. So Sonia Taffe. Shveta Thakrar, who describes herself, I just loved her, is Shveta Thakrar, that's S-H-V-E-T-A, T-H-A-K-R-A-R, is a South Asian-flavored fantasy writer, social justice activist, and part-time Nagini. Her work can be found in Here and There and all that, including Steam Powered 2, more lesbian steampunk stories, and I've got to tell you, you can't have enough lesbian
steampunk stories. I tend to agree, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, this is something that should not have a cap on it. So she will be reading, I imagine, some lesbian Steampunk Stories, and A.C. Wise, Allison Wise, who is just ultra cool. And she just had a book come out from Lethe Press. The Ultra Fabulous Glitter Squadron Saves the World Again!
What a title. She read some of that at KGB last year, and it was quite good.
KGB.
Yeah.
They're a reading series. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard of them. And next month, in April, they have somebody really good. One person I haven't heard of, and somebody who's really good. And I can't get to KGB anymore, because it's Wednesday nights when I have my show. But Gordon Lind, I used to record every KGB, going back to the first. And yes, I broadcast those too. But now Gordon Linsner records them. And they put them online and they send them to me. But now we video. We're actually on freaking live stream. And we've turned into a TV show. And Terrence Taylor is so brilliant with his videography. Although when you read, we were having microphone problems.
I remember.
Yes, but the good news is I also had my audio mic there. So we can take Terrence's video and the audio that I made, and there's something called Plural Eyes software that will try to match voice to video. So we will end up with...
I can't remember who is at KGB next month. I know that Alyssa Wong is going to be there in September, and that's going to be amazing.
Yes.
Because Alyssa is always amazing.
Yeah, I'm very PO'd because I invited her, and Now, where does she live?
She's in Raleigh.
Yeah, I don't care. She has to do a radio show. I don't care.
Excuse to get her back up here, you know?
People come to KGB. They don't, if I have to go somewhere with my mic, it's going to happen. But it's better when they're here live, as you are.
I am alive.
You certainly are.
Certainly.
I was not well aware of your work. Outside of the fact that I do audio editing, post-production, and hosting. I am the host of Lightspeed. I always forget that I'm the host. And we have two Hugo Awards now. Vote your conscience. And the...
Saying Lightspeed does some really good work.
It does. I don't understand why we are a semi-pro zine in Clark's world isn't eligible for anything.
I don't know what those rules are.
Because they were a semi-pro zine. And
yeah.
We do we have similar writers. We do similar work. One is the taste of John Joseph Adams and the other of Neil Clark, therefore Clark's World. Our podcasts are done out in Hollywood by Skyboat Media with professional actors and all very good and edited and stuff like that, where Kate Baker records at home, and she just does one bleeping, that's a good word, one bleeping brilliant job. Yeah. I sort of think of, in a way, we're sort of like the AM. Hello, welcome to Lightspeed Magazine. And she's the FM. Hi, did I tell you about Neil last week? No, it's that kind...
You guys do a fine job. You've done two of mine stories with Lightspeed, I think, so far.
Yes.
Yeah. And they're both of them were Gabrielle DeCour, and she's quite good.
Gabrielle is
quite good. Yeah, she's very good.
She really is.
Yeah, she nailed, especially the first one. Her words like Hunting Vixen Spring, she nailed that one. She really got that one.
And that's when I got that one just as I started editing. But I wasn't the host. Jack Kincaid. Was still the host and editor at that point. But it's all been Skyboat Media, which is Gabrielle DeCure and Stefan Rudnicki, for whom I'm doing.
They also did The Legend of Roe Ninja, which was fantastic.
Yeah, which I did not get to work on.
That was my finest hour.
I think.
The Legend of Roe Ninja, yeah.
It was my finest work.
On April 1st of 2014.
Oh, so an anniversary tomorrow. Wait a minute. I was editing then.
2013 or 2014.
Are you sure that it was Lightspeed?
It was Lightspeed. Oh, yeah. I got
then
permissions for that one.
Was I the host?
I don't think so, no. It might have been a special ordeal. I don't know. It was a very special story. So
was it part of Women Destroy Science?
No, it was on April 1st of either 2013 or 2014.
It was 2014, I was the host.
It might have been 2013.
2013, yeah. I was the editor.
It's one of the two.
And I'm still the editor. And now we're and now I'm actually working on audiobooks for Skyboat. Elysium has been out.
It was one of the two. It was a very special story about a robot ninja that John requested, and the style of Cormac McCarthy.
Oh, wait. Yes, no, that
now
was,
do you remember?
Yes, absolutely.
It's hard to forget. Once
and that's part of Fund My Robot Army, isn't
no,
it?
No, that was a different one, actually. Oh. I did have one in Help
John, Fund My John Robot. Has so many irons. He now has John Joseph Adams books.
He's been there very good
no,
to me.
There is no escape. And
yeah,
well,
and his Macmillan, it's Houghton Mifflin. Houghton Mifflin.
It's Houghton Mifflin.
Yeah.
It's Houghton Mifflin, somebody else. They ate another.
Of course.
The bigger fish ate another smaller fish.
Yeah.
It's.
I think he's going to do really good work there. I'm
yeah,
really excited
but
to see
now
what
he has
that.
His own imprint
yeah.
that's within Houghton Mifflin.
Yep.
Who's it? And
Houghton Mifflin, who is it?
And they have three books out now, and they will have, and starting next May, they go into full swing.
Yeah,
I think two titles a month.
Yeah, I don't know how he does everything he does. I don't know how he has the time to do everything he does, but he does it.
But I'd like to buy some of it. Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep. Give all your money to John.
No. Okay. If he does that, then I'll say, John, give me a raise. I get
that the money is, you know, follow the money.
I get under minimum wage, but I love it. I love the experience. I love the doing of it, and it doesn't matter. And it brings me other work.
Yep.
So it's all a showcase. It's all absolutely worth it.
Most of my work has been with Lightspeed, and it has always been great.
Did you do anything for Nightmare?
I did one for Nightmare.
Yeah,
the rest of it's been for Lightspeed.
I edit Nightmare, but I don't host. Jack and Kate still host.
I had one with Strange Horizons, and John was very angry that I had sold to someone that wasn't him, I think.
Whoa, goddess forbid! You know.
He's a greedy master, is John.
Yeah, it's called resume because people are going to take a look and say, she's only sold to this one. I didn't bring her.
Lightspeed is
resume.
Not a bad market to.
Well, it's one, two, as we started saying, 2 years in a row.
Yep.
Now, what makes it a semi pro zine?
I have no clue.
Neither do I. And then Clark's World was a semi pro zine.
Yep.
And it was usually those two seeing whose issue was longer, if you will. And as a toss-up, because as a person working for Lightspeed, may I say, Clark's World is great.
Oh, yeah.
And
get nothing but love for
Clark's
World.
But then, all of a sudden, Clark's World stopped being in the semi-prosing category.
I don't know how they judge that or what changes to
I think duration has something to do with it, that you've been paying a minimum word, you know, like umpteen cents a word for a number of years. And I think that you then graduate from being a semi-pro zine to being a pro zine with only one little problem. There's no pro zine award. There's Best Editor Short Form Award. And, you know, John and Neil and Ellen Datlow and a lot of fine people can duke it out over there, and it's not right, it's not fair, because the award should be for the zine, for the publication itself. So there should be a prozine category, and I think Lightspeed is going to eventually also fall off the ballot, because we're going to reach whatever.
Right.
We're younger than Clark's World.
And yeah.
I think that's the reason.
I'm not sure either. I'm not going to say. I don't know.
Yeah. So, but the story that blew me away, also because I worked on it a bit of the longest, and also because Gabrielle DeCure had such...
She had fun with that one, didn't
oh,
she?
Oh, one day you need to hear the outtakes. Oh, my God. I haven't told Gabrielle this, and hopefully you're not listening, are you? I've kept some outtakes. I've kept some churse outtakes, just like, oh, bleep, can this person write? And in the case of some other people, not you, it's like, that's not English! Who the is... And then, and now back to the story. And it's, I'll hear the door creak open as she goes into the studio, and I get the room tone that I use. And then, very, very close mic'd in her best voice, hello, Jim. And I can't work for another 10 minutes. That's it. I'm just like, you know. He says, you're going to like this one. It's Le Guin. You know? And
just imagining the DJ from the Warriors now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the first line of And You Will Know Her by the Trail of Dead, we can't even tell it to you, listeners. Can you tell there's it with
a,
bleeps?
There's a big sign on the wall that says I can't.
Well, yeah, but that sign doesn't know what it's saying. That's just the Carlin words.
Yeah.
In fact, the FCC doesn't say anything about those words. The FCC says you can't have indecency. So there's a saying that I quote from Carlin, but I can't. And it's not one of those seven words. It's I will use the bleep, and you people can figure it out.
Well, we can also
Google. The quote is that you can bleep your finger, but you can't finger your bleep.
Yes.
Okay. So, of course, you can use that word. And two of those words, by the way, are perfectly acceptable any time of day or night, especially if you're English. You're going to go to a bar and get pissed.
Well, yeah, but we're not in England. The Americans are a lot more prudish about that word.
Okay, so I never said that.
Yeah.
So, you know what it is. It's okay to use it as a noun or an adverb, but not as an action.
I don't know. In my experience, Americans are just... They don't like that word at all. Like, I don't know.
Generally not.
Generally, yeah. they their monocles pop out, and they kind of fall to the floor and have to have smelling salts rubbed under their nose.
Yeah, and there it is on Doctor Who, a kids' program.
Yeah. Nobody cares over there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's, you know, what do they know? They don't know English. Anyway, from the first line of the story, I was blown away, as was the character.
Yes. One of them, at least.
And I am a huge, as are the people, by the way, at Skyboat Media. When they're not doing science fiction, they're doing noir.
Ah.
And even Matt Helm, believe it or not, they did the first 10 Matt Helm novels, which I took on an editing job of two of them, thinking, oh, no, Dean Martin? Really? And what I didn't know is they're really good. They blow Ian Fleming away and half of those writers. They're in the neighborhood of Ross McDonald and a lot of the really good noir writers. Mm. I had no idea how nuanced the Matt Helm novels were because of those four sucky movies. Yeah, yeah, I'll share with you.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you might like them.
Yeah, cool.
So... how do you, your bio description as I've gotten it is weird enough for our audience, and I didn't happen to bring it with me, but you're a tea-driven organism.
I do not even remember my bio. Yeah. I write those in a drug-fueled haze, usually, you know, I don't know, bios.
It's up there with Shveta's bio. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. What do you write?
I write whatever I feel like writing at the time. So I write fantasy, I write sci-fi, I write what you would call slipstream, I guess, magical realism stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever I feel like, really. And I felt like writing some really violent, really sweary noir this time. So that's what I did. Because pulp is fun.
Pulp is fun. It was a lot of fun, but It was a laugh out loud, every sentence kind of story. It was, oh my God, I haven't had this much fun in ages. And when you get over that, there's a really, what's number three? There's a really number three-ing good story there.
It was a lot of number three-ing fun to write.
Yeah,
too.
And I've got, by the way, a picture on Facebook of that sign.
Yeah.
You know, so if people want
to
know
what number three is.
We've already
taken photos of it as well. Yeah.
Yeah, you can go and look at the photo, you know, and have a guide for what number three is.
Yep.
But if you know your Carlin.
No, that story is just my internal monologue kind of going amok, because that's basically what the inside of my head sounds like all the time. I'm censoring myself very carefully here. When I was in Clarion, it was an ongoing joke that I can't get through a sentence usually without number three-ing a lot. Mm-hmm. So I'm being very careful right now. But yeah, that story is just kind of me letting myself fly.
But it wasn't just the language, and it wasn't just the violence. And by the way, listeners know I'm not violence aversive. I'm what I call gornography. I just don't like it. I'm not saying anything necessarily against it, but I do think that it's exploitative, usually, depending on the auteur that is invoking it. I mean, Stanley Kubrick has done it. It's just not the same as when Wes Craven does it. You know, they're different. And
well,
Wes Craven's pretty good.
Use it differently, you know? It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. Or Tom Carpenter.
Or Tarantino, for that matter, you know? Like, it's...
Well, you see, that's, yeah. I mean, Tarantino makes great movies. I cannot watch the uncensored version of Pulp Fiction.
Really?
Yeah, I really can't. But he did it himself. He did a censored version, or rather a recut version, in which the evisceration scene is seen through the eyes of a witness, and we don't actually see the sword go into the belly and all the way up. Instead, we watch Bruce Willis actually doing the act. We see the blood spray. And it's beautiful editing, because it's Tarantino.
Yep.
And talk about your great slipstream science fiction stories.
Yeah.
Pulp Fiction, really, the hype is true.
Yeah.
But there are about four scenes in there that would just trouble me.
Yeah.
And so I exercise my First Amendment rights and don't see things that would trouble me.
Well, it's kind of hilarious if you watch it on, like, broadcast cable or something, though.
Yeah, and Sarah all the time.
Or that, or Kill Bill, which is just a laugh-out-loud joyride to watch on
cable, where it lasts about half an hour.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I know. And yet I'm so tempted. I'm just so tempted to see that.
Yeah.
But Pulp Fiction is my number one. My number two of his is probably Jackie Brown.
Yeah,
because it's Elmore Leonard. And he does it so well. And there aren't any scenes like that.
No, it's... I don't want to use the word subtle. It's not what people expect when they think of Tarantino, usually.
Yeah, it's tamer?
Tamer is... I don't know if tamer is the word either. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't want to use quieter either, because
it's
not
quieter. It's not as abrasive.
No, I mean...
Yeah, there isn't a good word.
It's... I don't know. It's kind of like how 25th Hour is Spike Lee's more subtle Spike Lee movie, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Where they kind of tone down themselves in it, you know? Like,
yeah.
I mean, a Tarantino movie, you can usually tell, you know, you know a Tarantino movie when you see it, but maybe not so much with Jackie Brown, or not so much with 25th Hour.
And Spike Lee. I've seen the worst part of Reservoir Dogs. 25th Hour was filmed around the corner from my house.
Really?
Yeah, really was. The whole place was blocked off.
I love that movie.
Street. And there are people who in my neighborhood, Brooklyn neighborhood, and they say, what are they doing over there? You know, that bar is closed and they've changed the front. And I said, all I know is that I saw Ed Norton walking around the neighborhood. And they're all going, Norton! Norton! It's like, no, Edward Norton, he's this actor. No, you mean Norton? No, Never mind. Never mind.
I do love that movie, though. That's a good movie. It's a great movie.
It really is.
Yeah, and it's one of Spike Lee's lesser known ones too. I don't know.
I don't know why.
I don't know why, because it's like for him, it's surprising. I don't know. It's I don't know. Like I love everything Spike Lee has ever done, but I don't know if I'd say he has a subtle hand usually. Like I don't know. He paints in broad strokes sometimes, and that one is a little more subtle.
But he's an auteur.
Yeah.
And he's a brilliant auteur.
Yeah.
As
he's
is
brilliant
Tarantino.
At what he does. Yeah. But it's just like I said, like with Jackie Brown, it's a little more subtle. Like it's a little less auteur and like I don't know.
Well, it's also an adaptation of a novel.
Right. Yeah, which I've never actually read the novel 25th Hour, but
I haven't read that.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was
adaptation. It is a novel, yeah.
Ah, okay. And Jackie Brown is an Elmore Leonard novel.
Yeah.
Which is not called Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
I
don't know if that wonderful monologue Norton does right around the middle, which has the word in it several times. If you remember that, where he's speaking into the mirror and he has this monologue about New York, which is great. Yeah. I don't know if that's actually in the novel. I kind of want to read it just to find out.
Well, if and when the station survives and we get the ability to have Safe Harbor back, because there's really no number three reason why we can't play And You Will Know Her by the Trail of Dead, which is, I know you've written a lot of great stories. I'm sorry, I have a fetish for that.
Everyone loves, I mean, that's why it's on the Nebula Belt this year.
It's on the Nebula Belt. Too late for you, listeners, but then again, you can't vote for the Nebula unless you're an active member of the Science Fiction Fantasy Writers of America.
You have to be a CIFWA.
You have to be more, because I'm CIFWA, but I'm an associate member. You have to be an active member, which means somebody who's written X amount of works.
The deadline has already passed, so that's done.
Oh, yeah,
the die has been cast, and that's done. Like,
the ballot
whatever
is in, and are you going to the awards in
Chicago?
Oh,
yeah, of course, yeah.
I am so tempted to go, because I always have such a great time at the Nebulas, but I'm PO'd that they... I am too owed that they are not held in New York much anymore. They used to alternate New York, L.A., New York, L.A. So I used to go, going back to 1970 or so, I used to go every 2 years. And then they started this, doing all
roundabout.
These other, yeah, roundabout kind of a thing. This year in Chicago, it's a killer because, A, it's the 50th year.
Yep.
B, it's the same week as BEA, the Book Sellers Expo of America.
Whew.
Same hotel.
Wow, that I did not know.
Not a coinkadink. And number three, it's the same week as the Audi Awards for people who work on audiobooks.
Really?
Which I now do. It's about the only thing I get paid
for. So you have a triplicate reasons to go.
Yeah, I'm not going because I'm going to Worldcon. For the first time since 2000.
You know, like, I mean, you know, I hope to have a reason maybe to go to that, but we'll see.
Well,
I'll
give you the reason right now.
You mean the Hugo Awards?
No.
No?
No. The guest of honor, Michael Swanwick. This is going to be one cocktail party.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to get a lecture on what goes into a martini that will fascinate you for an hour, you ask Swanwick. And I tell him, well, I'm making a Vesper. And he will tell you, no, you're not, because what they sold today as Lillet isn't what was sold as Lillet when Ian Fleming wrote Casino Royale. And how many of you know what a Vesper is? I bet you do.
I do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I make it anyway with the white wine that they call a Lillet. I prefer it over vermouth. So it's one part gin, half a part vermouth and one part Lillet. This is not dry at all. And one of these will knock you on your... It's not one of the words. On your butt.
On your posterior.
Your
but it's
rear
not
end
on there, though. Actually, that's true. It's not on the thing.
No, it's really...
Not on the list. It's not one of the seven words you cannot say.
The seven words are not what are proscribed. It was the seven words that got WBAI into trouble. But that isn't what we were taken to task for. It was the indecency of the time of day that it was broadcast at Saturday at 2. I think was actually, a fair decision. And they didn't penalize us much. Just the lawyer fee, which, well, I understand maybe not all of it got paid, maybe. Those people represent Fox today. Ew. But anyway.
Shudder goes over the room.
Yeah, but they've done some very good things in the, with the money of Fox for advancing the First Amendment.
True.
Just the wrong reason. So, yes, Ben.
I have to cut in real quick. I have to call you to task here. You asked her, several conversations, Redzibek, why she wrote. And she told me once that she wrote the stories she wanted to read, which is a response that you conveniently left out.
Well, that's also true.
Would you do me a favor? Would you use a different microphone?
I think I can do that.
I think I can do that.
Oh, yes. Definitely.
I can, in fact, do that.
Yes. And now we can hear you.
That's delightful.
That's so you were calling Brooke out.
I am calling Brooke out.
And I continue to call you Brooke, although I know that...
Brooke is fine. It, you know, I just let people call me whatever they want to call me. And Brooke Wonders, who is a lovely writer, was with me at Clarion. So they had to pick to call one of us something that was not Brooke to avoid confusion. And I got stuck with Beau.
Okay, and Brooke, you didn't want to be River because then you end up being a Joss Whedon character.
Sorry?
Firefly, anybody? River?
Yeah.
Okay. Or River Song.
Yeah.
My favorite River is River Song.
What were you calling me out on, Benjamin?
Getting back to...
I asked you that question once, and you said that you wrote because you wanted to write the stories that you wanted to read.
Of course, that's also...
As opposed to saying the stories you wanted to write. We're ganging up.
Well, both.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I mean, it was like, you know, Octavia Butler's line about, I wrote books with characters who look like me.
Right. I mean, if there's a book out there you can't find, and it's like, well, damn it, I wish I could find that, you know... novel, then you go write it yourself if you can, which is really difficult when you're writing a novel and you want to go read something like what you're writing to kind of get your footing, and it's like, well, that doesn't actually exist yet.
But you have to have the chops.
Right.
I mean, I have really good ideas, and yeah. I, having been a writer of nonfiction, I know I can't write. I can write nonfiction. I can write copy.
Well, at this point, I think I can write. I'm pretty sure I can write. Yeah,
I think we have a consensus.
Yeah.
About time.
Well, he's been saying that for a while. He's my he's been my
fan.
He's been my fan, yeah. He's been
muse.
My muse.
Ooh,
glorious patron.
My glorious patron. That's what I usually say. He's been making sure I could write for years. I owe it all to him.
Well, this is a good thing.
Well, also my talent, my endless font of talent. But, you know, talent isn't everything. You also have to have people who are lifting you up, right?
Well, we'll see if my partner, if and when she gets her novel out, if I'll be listed in
there. It's a pretty sweet gig, I gotta say.
Yeah. Yeah, but we just have, she spends all of her days on nonfiction, so yeah. We have to.
Well, nonfiction is honestly better at paying the bills.
Well, there's that, since I work here.
Okay,
and at light speed, you know, yeah. So it's like I'm a lifelong volunteer. I was actually a vice president at Citibank for a short while, but that was a network manager job. Doesn't count. and then that changed, the SNL scandals. So they got rid of all the cool departments in Citibank. So we actually had 3 WBAI people working at Citibank. That's, nobody can believe that. I had my hair cut. Well, now there's not much hair to cut anyway, but you may or may not know that I was like a bush.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah.
I'll show you pictures on the air. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, very much so. Are there themes that you like to touch upon? The problem is we don't have a story. We will. We will do this, and we will have a story of yours on the air, one way or another.
I don't think there is any one theme I really touch on. I think I just write about whatever is kind of sitting in my head at the time, or, you know, what I want to read.
Well, why is so much of it skiffy? Which is, by the way, for people who don't know,
you know, it's
those of us who are so old that we don't like to say sci-fi, we say skiffy.
I don't know. My brain is very strange, I guess. Because I didn't, like, growing up, I did not read a lot of science fiction.
What did you read?
Mostly Jack London, stuff like that. Like.
I haven't edited a Jack London piece for Skyboat Media in hours.
Yeah. Jack London, you know, like animal adventure stories, you know, like
Bret Hart.
Wilderness adventure stories, Albert Payson Terhune, like the Lad books, you know, you know, like Lad a Dog and all that stuff. Sterling North.
Most of these though are very boy oriented.
Yeah, but I didn't care.
Yeah, I mean it's nice.
Gender was not a problem with me, you know. That didn't matter.
Yeah, but it's always nice to have some Louisa May Alcott, who's a fine writer. Jane Austen, one of the best.
I did not read for women until I was older.
Actually. Neither did I. But I did read Jane Austen.
I did not read Jane Austen. I remember reading, I read Anne of Green Gables, I think.
Yeah, everybody did.
Yeah.
I didn't, actually.
Didn't read in the sequels because they just kind of diminishing returns with that stuff.
Yeah.
Waringal's Wilder. I read a lot of Wolf House. Which are interesting books. You can just, like, they get progressively, sort of the J.K. Rowling thing where the books seem to grow up with Wilder. Like, by the time they get to, like, the first 4 years, which is the book about her and her husband, things get a little grim. Like, it's a little less Little House on the Prairie and more, like, you know, and then her first child died or something, you know?
Yeah.
And then the crops failed, and, you know, and then the bankers came for you know, the farm, and, you know, everything gets very bleak.
Yeah.
But it was, I did not read a whole lot of science fiction back then. It was all stuff like that. It was all, like, historical fiction or,
Any detective work?
Not really, no.
I'm actually surprised by that. I would have thought that...
What?
Your mic is still on.
Yeah. I was going to let you jump in and take care of it yourself.
Are we talking about reading fiction, or are we just talking about
reading? Reading.
Because what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say that there was certainly a detective influence in your life at large.
Well, my favorite movie was Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which is a great Chinatown pastiche, honestly, with Bob Hoskins in that wonderful role as Eddie Valiant, which was a huge influence. So I guess that was there. And
he did other noir films that were actually noir films.
No, The Long Good Friday.
Oh,
that's such an amazing
It's a great movie.
Yeah, and nobody has heard of that movie.
That's awful that they don't know it.
A great noir movie, like The Long Good Friday is it. That's British. I mean, that's British noir, but...
Then there's a lot of great British noir out there.
It's its own thing, but, you know, you shouldn't hunt it down if you like noir. Like, the last shot of that movie, like, I won't spoil it, but it's such a great final shot.
Yeah.
That one long take, like... It's a great movie, but he did such a great job with selling, like, that movie, like, Who Framed Roger Rabbit would not work without Bob Hoskins selling the fact that he is speaking to cartoons, like, he sells it completely. Apparently he got so into the role that
it's these Brits, he does a very good, we were talking about this before we walked into studio, his American accent is great.
Oh, yeah. You can't, like, I would not...
You would not know.
Now I would not be able to tell.
He gets the Hugh Laurie House Award for...
He nailed it. And he was such a cockney. When he died a couple years ago, it just went all over me. Like, that was kind of...
He was a great actor. So many people being taken too young. Yeah. Speaking of which, by the way, a personal friend in science fiction died today. A fellow named Morris Keeson. Not a writer, a fan. But somebody integral to much of East Coast fandom, especially in the Boston area, which is probably the hub of science fiction fandom for their World Cons and ReaderCon and Erigia and Boscone. And Morris was very involved in all those and went to every East Coast convention and was simply a lovely, lovely person. 1 year older than me, brain cancer, and just like there is a hashtag for this, which is #3 cancer. And we're talking, of course, again, #3 is just that word.
This year has been kind of devastating.
And it's amazing. And the same day, Patty Duke.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not a personal friend.
Bowie back in like January. That talk about like devastating deaths. Like,
well, I did a show.
Someone I will never meet and had never known, but was such a big influence. Like
also in science fiction.
In science fiction, the man who fell to Earth is such a great.
What movie. A performance! I'm so glad though that they didn't do Stranger in a Strange Land with him, because I don't want to see that movie.
No, I wouldn't. I don't know if that would work.
The first three parts of it, it's a 5-part novel, are great. And then all of a sudden, when the lead character finds sex, the book just falls apart.
Now, Man Who Fell
and so did Heinlein.
I don't know if I'd call it a good movie. I don't know if all the component parts work to make a great movie, but it's an interesting movie, and its interestingness, it is great. I can't say that the parts work great, but the movie is great anyway, despite that.
And the novel by Walter Tevis, same man who wrote The Hustler.
Yeah.
Yeah, that always causes a blink from people. It's like, what did this guy write? Well, he wrote The Man Who Fell to Earth. Oh, that's nice. And The Hustler. It's like, what? And if you've ever seen or read The Hustler, it's not about what you think it's about. And it's hard to talk about that movie without spoilers or reveals. But my partner, I got her to see it about 2 or 3 months ago. Because, you know, why are you going to watch a movie about a pool shark? You know, big deal. Jackie Gleason's really good in it. And Paul Newman is Paul Newman. He can't not be good. George C. Scott. Okay, but that's not what it's about. It's about Piper Laurie. And that's all that I'll say. I've already said too much, but I don't care if you hate pool. I don't care if you hate sports or movies of that type. The Hustler is a great movie because of Walter Tevis's novel. And The Man Who Fell to Earth has some brilliant moments in it. And was that Nicholas Rock?
It was, okay.
Yeah. Okay. He understands surrealism.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how well he understands SF. And
or plotting or a couple of things. Like, I don't know.
But he had little things that they weren't doing in science fiction. Bowie puts on a pair of glasses.
Yeah.
And he's indoors and glasses are clear and fine. And as he's talking to somebody, he goes outdoors and they slowly polarize to dark. Now, that technology did not exist. Yeah. It only exists to... And the camera never... does a close-up on it. It never indicates. It never says, hey, look, everybody, this is sci-fi.
Just let it go, yeah.
It's just there.
Yeah.
And that along with Bowie's performance, this ethereal...
I got to see that movie for the first time in a theater in San Diego while I was at Clarion, actually, like on a big screen, and that is the way to see that for the first time, because... I get the feeling that if you were trying to watch it at home, you would get distracted pretty easily because it's such a strange movie. Like, but when you are locked in and you cannot get away, you know, that's a good way to watch it because, like, you're forced.
I wanted to, and I suspect we'll eventually get the chance to see Lazarus.
Yeah.
Which, now how much did his son have to do with that?
I don't think he had anything to do with it. Actually,
no.
Yeah. The play? Yeah, no.
Yeah, and I'm blanking on his son's name.
Yeah, Duncan Jones.
Duncan Jones, right.
And Source Code as well.
Yeah.
Which I've never actually seen.
It's
great. I was rewatching that last night, and it's still a great movie.
Yeah.
With Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, I love Sam Rockwell.
He's a great actor. I don't know what he's done recently, really. He hasn't been...
He's working. Yeah. He's working. He's too good not to be working, but he's not necessarily taking the tentpole projects. He's not in the Marvel Universe
He's just kind of doing the Ed Norton thing where he's kind of doing what he feels like at this point, I guess.
Yeah, you know? Because he can.
Yeah, when you can, you go do the projects you want to do. Like, you get to a certain
Yeah. But, yeah, this has been a truly crappy year for mortality.
I'm kind of afraid of what's coming up. I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm going to put it differently. Okay, folks, the first quarter, the first fiscal quarter is over. End this nonsense. End this number one, which in school you would have called number two. End this crap. Mortality sucks.
Yeah.
And I have had too many friends, three people, integral people here at WBAI, including my closest friend, Margot Adler. That was a year and a half ago, and Simon Locally, and I were sort of, I was on 5 to 7, he was on 7 to 8:30, and I did the low brow lit, and he did the high brow lit, and we subbed for each other. So when he did my show, he'd talk about The Dream, meaning Midsummer Nights. And when I did his show, I would find some space version of Moby Dick or something like that. It was by, who wrote that? R.A. Lafferty. Great stuff, great stuff. Space Shanty is the name of the Lafferty book. And we both just dug Tom Stoppard. So yeah, enough of this stuff.
Gary Shandling died like 2 days ago, too. Yeah.
No, it's something I don't know, and I don't want to.
Not taking any prisoners.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear people say, "Oh, you know, they've reached that age." You know, oh God. Should I? It'll be in here somewhere. I have Locally. No, I won't do it. I won't do it. We have Locally reading a piece by, oh, help me, Irish writer, not Joyce, Beckett. Samuel Beckett, that starts with, "Despite all, I soon shall die." And it's like, oh, God.
The Irish cheerful's never.
Oh! And at the Hibernian Lounge, the Swift Pub, which is kitty corner from KGB, we held the memorial for Simon on February 22nd, and I did tech. Because if I had to attend, I wouldn't attend. But if I can work it, that's my way in, because it's too emotional for me. And I just found on the computer in front of me all the material from that. And it's like, no, I can't do it. Want to say hi to people out there? Or just talk?
Hi, people.
Hi, people. If you would like... I mean, do you want them to say hi back to you? That's really the question.
Sure.
The telephone number here at WBAI, and if you are not relevant, you are off the air. I do not practice free speech at this free speech radio station. I moderate. Telephone number here at WBAI is 718-780-8888. You will need your headphones at this point. Not at home. And if you are at home and you are calling in, you need to turn your radio off because we're on delay. So let's see. It's one of these. Oh, probably. You know, I would have said it's one marked phone, except... That's Ben's mic. So, I don't know. I'll just turn them all up and getting a lot of calls. Good morning. You're on the radio, I think.
Hi. I just want you to know your guest mic has been out, so you have to readjust.
Okay. It's actually turned all the way up. So, the best we can do is... Is that Lister? I can't see. Oh, it's Lister. Jesus.
It happened when Ben came in. When you put on...
Ah, so it lowered the volume of everything. Thank you very, very much, because my headphones suck.
Okay, you got it.
I really appreciate that.
My pleasure.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Have a good morning.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye. Wow, okay, that's worth it. So, Ben, once again, you're going to have to give me a thumbs up to open your microphone. One second, I have to send... a message to somebody who's trying to let me know he's here. Lister, if you want to come in, come in! We're very subtle here at WBAI. Hi, Lister. Just reminding people to stay tuned at 3 a.m. for Burn Baby Burn Clapper, coming your way with Lister on these same airwaves. All righty. Again, we're not 212 anymore. We're 780-8888. And hopefully, and Brooke, if you would pull the mic a little closer to yourself. Yeah, you don't have to sit up more, but just pull a little closer. And good morning. You're on the radio. Hello.
Morning, Mr. Freund.
Hello. How are you?
Well, okay, enjoying the show for a few...
What time is it?
Over here, it's 9:31 a.m. on Thursday morning.
Okay. So, therefore... Yeah.
The 2 weeks wonderful? In which you were doing daylight savings and we weren't are past by now, so it's...
Did you not have daylight savings until now?
Well, Europe switched it on 2 weeks later.
Oh, I see.
Which happens every year, 1 or 2 weeks, for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think, and by the way, especially tomorrow, Friday, in the U.S., everybody, set your clocks 90 minutes backwards. On April 1st, I hope you're listening carefully, on April 1st, change your clock. I don't care which way. Just change it. It's April 1st. So, Bobson, you're talking to Brooke. Bobson is calling us from Bulgaria, I assume?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Well, it's been a while since. So, I am enjoying the show, and I have not been able to read up anything that you've written. I found some things online, but didn't have the chance to read before the show. So then,
you didn't do your homework.
I didn't do any homework, yes. Sorry about that.
You knew there was going to be a test, right?
Nope.
Every week here in Hour of the Wolf, we test whether Jim is sane or not, and I think we already know the answer to that one.
Oh, come on, Jim.
Talk to Brooke. She's the guest.
Jim is a guest, and talk to Brooke. I have...
I said she is the guest.
Yes, she is the guest, but I would... I'm looking forward to reading some of the stuff that you have written, for I have not yet been able to do so, for which I apologize.
So where should he go? Besides
Lightspeed.
Basically Lightspeed magazine.
Lightspeed, mostly, yeah. That's where all it is.
Boost
your signal a little more.
Okay. Well.
Okay. So either you have nothing more to say, or we have lost your signal.
Are you talking to me? Or
yes,
well, I have nothing to... I don't know what else to say, because I'm looking forward to reading some of the stuff from what I've heard.
It always blows my mind to know that we can get phone calls from anywhere in the world.
That's 19th century technology, isn't it? Or something like that. Well, telephony is such.
If you take one turn to the universe on your counter left, yes. Widdershins. Turn Widdershins, that'll do it.
I'm not turning right now.
Oh, okay. I'm terribly sorry. And besides, my Widders have really been overused lately. Now is the widder of our... Never mind. I'm free associating. This is not good for the host or anybody. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for a good show.
Okay.
Have a great morning.
Good afternoon. Okay. And let's see. Press that. Ooh, and there were two other calls, and they disappeared. What happens, by the way, is calls disappear off this board for a while after like 10 rings, and you may be calling, you may be hearing the ringing, but I don't see you, so I can't put you on the air. So please dial back Area code 718-780-8888. And let me say that this is Hour of the Wolf over WBAI in New York City. Listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica radio broadcasting at 99.5 FM and over WBAI.org. And good morning, you're on the radio.
Good morning, James.
Good morning.
I'm sorry you mentioned about Mr. Keeson many, many, many eons ago at some convention or other. He was introduced to me by, I then knew her as Judy Harrow. I don't know if she ever changed her name. I believe she was Brian somebody's wife. Or
Brian Burley.
Brian Burley. So, and he and I
would use the word wife.
Well, significant other than whatever. I'm sorry. We folkies have lost a lot of people in the last year. I won't even go into names. Many great, great singers, traditional and otherwise. I'm glad you mentioned the third ingredient. Yes, some of us have heard of Vespers. I did not know, however, how it was pronounced. Lele, what did you say? Lele? Lele.
Lele. L-I-L-L-E-T. Not Vespers. It's not a church ceremony.
No, Vesper.
A Bond character.
Yeah.
Vesper, and I forget her last name.
Yeah. Hello, Brooke. It's hard to... Brooke sounded like, for a while, she was talking from the Magellanic Cluster.
Yes, well, I have to thank that first caller for alerting me, because I'm serious when I say my headphones suck. I cannot hear me. I do not know when I'm on the air, and we don't have a VU meter.
A what meter?
A VU meter is a meter that tells you what the volume of...
So I've been saying all the words on that list the entire time.
Yeah, exactly. I could have done it. I could have been a contender anyway.
But
again.
By the way, the word for knocking, you mentioned somebody got knocked on his whatever, the word...
Posterior.
When I was in grammar school at a very old world Dominican grammar school in the Bronx, and when we were misbehaving, we were knocked on the popo.
Yes, that's the term my parents used.
Yes, well, in England, it's the boom, pronounced boom. So, by the way, such a word... That it
the
appears,
bum, the bum.
Yeah, I know. No. In the Northeast, up in Geordie, come on, James.
They don't know how to speak English.
I know that. Well, the Geordies. Everyone knows that a Geordie is a Scotsman with his head turned.
David Tennant can't speak English. Christopher Eccleston, forget it.
Well, you know. No. Everyone knows that up in Geordie land, the Geordies are Scotsmen with their heads turned up backwards. But anyway, bum or whatever appears in at least that I know. Lyrics to 13 English music hall songs. So
I'm sure you can, and I don't think we can broadcast.
No. Well, actually, you could, because none of them say anything that goes beyond decency. By the way, you know, I've always loved your word gornography. It is a great term, and unfortunately,
I stole it. I got it.
Where'd you get it from?
The Manchester Guardian.
Really?
Speaking of England, there was some woman who wrote an article. Oh, maybe 15 years ago. Who's writing about, you know, slaughterhouse movies and the like. And she used the term, and I've Googled it, and I've looked it up, and I have no recollection of who did it or whatever, so I'm trying to coin it.
I think... Well,
just like I've been trying to coin Douglas Adams' use of treble you for, like, your website.
www.wbai.org.
It's not
W. The first movie... that I ever encountered that to me was gornographic was a movie that came out in the 70s, I believe it was the 70s, which featured four sets of actor brothers. It was called The Long Riders, and in the scene when the James and Youngers try to rob the Northfield Bank, and it was shot to doll rags, there's this thing, and I don't know if it's slow motion, but the bullets were just going in and through, and I mean, you could hear this noise, and it was just... A friend of mine said you should see the blood, and it was just that to me was pornographic, and it was again in slow motion, and it was gratuitous, and I just didn't like it, and I understand why there are things that you won't see which you don't like.
Well, there are some gratuitous things that I enjoy the heck out of, but
okay, you do.
You know that third drink, that's gratuitous.
The third? What do you mean the third? What's not gratuitous about the first two?
No, they're required. Oh. Anyhow, let's move along.
Yes. All right.
Thanks for calling.
Take care.
Take care. And again, the calls disappeared. But I'm pleased that at, 2:42 in the morning in New York, we're getting some decent phone calls. 718-780-8888. I have these numbers burned into my brain that we've been using for so long that I remember the exchange names. Oxford 7. Da-da-da-da. These numbers have been reassigned. So we used to actually go on the air and say, call now and pledge Oxford 7. Anyway. Who do you like to read?
Me?
Yeah, you, now.
Can I take these off?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you can take them off.
Oh. Recently.
Well, recently meaning in the last 15...
In the last 15 years?
Yeah.
I don't know, my big...
Yeah, while you're doing that, I'm trying to boost your volume.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I don't know, I'm thinking of, recent authors. Sam Miller has had some amazing work out.
Sam J. Miller. Sam J. Joshua Miller.
Sam is amazing. The Heat of Us, I think, was my favorite thing it's been over the past year.
Yeah, even though that wasn't a light speed or nightmare story.
No, it was he's done about four. It was four. Uncanny, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and that was an amazing story.
I had him on this show before he had published a single story. I'm very proud.
And he's taken off like a rocket.
Oh, yes, he really has, and deservedly so.
Yeah, no, he deserves every bit of that. Can't wait to see what he does next.
Yeah, we had him at a Nursif reading with Samuel R. Delaney because I wanted to have two Sams.
I missed that for some reason, too, and I was so mad.
Oh, but it's online.
Yeah, but...
It was good.
Keith Johnson, who was one of my Clarion teachers.
Everybody loves Keith Johnson. She is brilliant.
I love her as a person, and I love her as a writer. Everything she
does. And especially her students, they all have.
She's an amazing teacher. She taught us so much at Clarion. Our final week, TMOs, Keith and John Kessel. They were an amazing team.
Yeah. We should explain to listeners who don't know that Clarion Science Fiction Writers Workshop is sort of like de rigueur. It is the place to not just hone your craft, but to find your craft. And it's 6 weeks long, and a different teacher each week's 5 weeks are writers, and 1 week as an editor, and it is intense. And most, I've once had a guest who was very good and didn't come out of Clarion. Otherwise, everybody as good has gone there.
There are many, many, many good writers who did not get a
seat.
I mean, there's plenty. There was a couple of authors recently. Who else?
Name three. No, don't.
Peter Beagle has always been one of my favorite writers, and I hear he's having some trouble.
There are issues, because I know he was, by the way, the third guest ever on this radio program.
And he's a great guy. Super nice guy.
He brought his guitar. He sang folk songs.
He's big into the folk scene. I don't know if there he was.
He was in the Greenwich Village folk scene when he was a New Yorker. Absolutely. Yeah. And when Margot Adler ran this show, I got to engineer... He came on not as a writer, and she's talking about this song and that song and saying, can we discuss a fine and private place, please, now?
But she wrote I was rereading that, and he wrote it when he was 19, and it kind of makes me a little angry that someone could write something that good at 19. It's not fair. I didn't even start writing really until I was, 25.
Yeah.
And it's such a good book. It's a little frustrating. And then he wrote The Last Unicorn after that. And it's
And please, people, read The Last Unicorn before watching the movie. The movie
is okay.
It's okay. It doesn't
Mostly
really do
Christopher
it.
Christopher Lee brings in a really good, like, he delivers, like, he's got a speech as Haggard in that, and it's just, he nails it. Like, it's Christopher Lee, and he's just selling it. He's
well,
just like, you know, he apparently brought in his copy of the book with, like, stuff marked.
He's a great reader.
Yeah, he loved that book, too. So he had, like, passages marked. He was like, we cannot cut this out, you know, and... so he's got that speech at the end, and it's just amazing. He just sells it. But the book is one of my favorite things ever. That book is,
it is.
It gets better every year I read it. Like, the older you get, the better it actually gets.
Yeah. And Christopher Lee, let me just mention, I got to interview him.
Yeah.
Because, and I don't generally go for a lot of actors, but Christopher Lee was going around promoting The Man with the Golden Gun, in which he was a Bond villain. And so I get a phone call. Would you like to interview Christopher Lee? Well, of course I would. Oh, my God! And he came in, and he was this nice, you know, 8-foot-tall guy. And I said, well, I'm a big Bond fan, but let's discuss. He said, what I'd really like to talk about is Wagner. I've always wanted to be an opera singer, but I could never get the registers to be a Helden tenor.
He did put out a death metal album later in his
Yes,
life.
He did. Yes. Yes, he did. And he said, so instead, I thought, well, we have 2 hours? I said, yes. He said, oh, good. I brought a Bram Stoker short story with me. I'd like to read it for you. And Psycho. Yeah. Break my arm, please. Yeah. That was my Christopher Lee story. I have to boast.
My favorite Christopher Lee story is on the set of... Return of the King, I guess, you know, Peter Jackson trying to tell him how to be stabbed, you know, at the end, and he was like, no, that's not how a man being stabbed sounds. Let me tell you how a man being stabbed in the back sounds. And, you know, Peter Jackson's like, how are you doing that? And he was like, well, in the war, I was doing some stuff, and I'll leave it there.
God.
Yeah.
And he probably also knows the difference between how a man being stabbed sounds, how a man being staked sounds,
yeah, he,
being axed, being decapitated.
He was up to some stuff during the war.
Yeah. England.
Yeah.
That word again.
But yeah.
So Peter S. Beagle, which is a great starting place for anybody.
And he has always been like, whenever I've met him at a signing or something, he has just been the nicest guy in the world.
He really is. When's the last time you saw him?
It would have been 2011. He was at San Diego Comic-Con, just kind of sitting alone in a booth.
Very cool.
And I ended up getting a book signed and just talk to you. He will just kind of talk your ear off if you let him.
Yeah, yeah, and I do.
Yeah, no,
last time,
just talk to me, man. Like, I will listen to, you know.
Last time I was on the show was 2008.
Yeah.
And actually, I recorded him at Tor Books.
Yeah.
Which was fun, just set up a 360 microphone and
in the flat iron, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My big entry into kind of like weird slipstreamy like fantasy stuff was Watership Down by Richard Adams.
Oh my God. I watched the movie 2 days ago for the first time in many years.
It was on one of the
It was on TCM.
Yeah,
it was on.
It was.
I live for TCM.
Yeah, yeah. It was like a cleaned up print and everything, which that movie didn't really need a cleaned up print. Like, the animation is not great.
It isn't. All the watercolors and
like the Criterion release.
And with no offense, Garfunkel is better with Simon.
Yeah.
But
that song was apparently like a big hit.
It really was.
In the UK.
Yeah.
Bright Eyes was like that was a huge hit over there.
And I get to boast, I had Richard Adams on the show.
Really?
Yes, really. And he, again, talk about nice people. And I was like
he's still alive. He's 98 or something now. He's like up in
He wasn't life. Young when Watership Down came out. And he was going from the Today Show to this big venue to that big venue. And here, you know, little old me, I was a little younger then. And I was like the only person who got it. I was one of the few people who read the book, who understood the idea of the POV
book.
Of the rabbits and really understood world building.
I found that book entirely by accident, too. I was at a book fair in junior high and just kind of picked it up. Like, I had not heard any of the previous hype. Like, I had no...
It was a sensation for about a year.
It was back in
that
like the 70s. But
Shardik was his other book, yeah.
Which which I've had a copy of for years and have never been able to crack. Like, I'll try to crack it and not quite get into it.
It's not quite.
It's the dense. Same. It's the world building is pretty dense. But it's, I mean, it's still beautifully written, because I don't think he wrote anything that wasn't beautifully written. He just had a daft hand with the prose, which I'm a sucker for good prose. Like,
yeah, it helps.
Yeah, anything like.
That was a time when great science fiction.
Yours, you know, like I honestly like Pynchon, like I freaking love Pynchon.
But
avoided that.
You got it.
Yeah, you know, like I don't. It's like I don't know.
Pynchon is freaking great.
I'll go with that. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, like rhythmically, like just his sentences, the way they are laid out is like a lot of writers, like especially in the science fiction world. You get really great ideas, but you don't always get great prose with the rhythm, too, of sentences and stuff.
So let me throw in one name who I think of in terms of Pynchon, and this usually alarms people, Delaney.
Mm. Yeah.
Dahlgren and Gravity's Rainbow can be, I won't say one is better than the other or one is as good as the other, but I think that they can be compared in the kinds of literature they are, in the kind of prose and experimentalism that's used. And yes, Gravity's Rainbow is science fiction.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
People don't understand. And people say, how can you say that? It's literature. Excuse me. By page 3, the sun has gone nova. Yeah. Shall we move on? So it qualifies.
It's like, and I saw someone complaining about the plot the other day, and I was like, who the hell was reading Gravity's Rainbow for the plot? Like, I don't know. I'm reading it because it's really nicely.
What did you think of the movie? And now I'm forgetting the name. The Thomas Pynchon movie that just came.
Oh, Inherent Vice.
Yes, Inherent Vice. I finally saw it recently.
Yeah, it was solid.
I liked it.
You read the book, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a big Pynchon fan. I felt the movie was kind of paint by numbers, but it was paint by numbers of a very good original creation, so yeah. I could not exactly dislike it.
I thought there was only one gratuitous part, which was I didn't see why, not that I object to looking at the whole of Catherine Waterston, but that where she throws herself at the detective.
Well,
literally,
he's not exactly known for pulling his punches and sex scenes.
No, but it was the movie that it takes so much time, and the camera leers.
So does his prose. My gosh, it's extremely graphic. The entire conversation.
Yeah. So I'm going to accept your.
I was equally sort of shocked by the scene, but I was shocked at how faithfully it sort of characterized the extremely graphic nature of that scene from the book.
Yeah, and it's another one of those unfilmable books.
Exactly.
So, time flies. We have under a minute. Would you believe that? Yeah, because there's an outro theme, you see.
Yeah.
So the show actually ends, despite Lister's sweetness for saying, oh, you just go on, Jim. I do try to end at 2:56:30, which that clock can't be corrected. Doesn't matter. Where are we going to see, what is your next venue? What's coming out?
Well, I am currently working on a couple of novels. One of which is an adaptation of your favorite here, of Trail of Dead.
I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah.
Is it a fix-up, or is it taking the story further?
It's both right now. A little column A, a little column B.
You're pulling a Raymond Chandler, because that's what he did.
Yep.
Killer in the Rain becomes the Big Sleep.
Yep. Yeah. Because people really wanted that. They really wanted an extension of that thing. So I said, okay, I can do that. And then I'm kind of playing with a fantasy novel as well. So I've kind of got two of those in the fire right now. Nothing.
Novellas, short stories?
I'm working on a couple of short stories. One in particular I've got an idea for, but mostly I'm focusing on the novels right now.
Okay, and nothing in the can, as it were?
Nothing in the can right now, unfortunately.
So I don't get to edit anything? So.
Not yet, you know, you never know. Like, I might just bust something out, you know.
Yeah, or we'll do something on the radio.
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah, there you go.
Challenge your vocabulary. It's like James Thurber wrote an entire novel without using the letter O.
Yep.
See if you can do See an if entire I can do book without, without using the letter F.
Without using any of those seven words. I don't know. Like, if I edited down Trail of Dead to be that way, it would take about 2 minutes to read it out here.
It would just be bleep.
No, like, it would just, like, if I cut all the word, like, all the threes out of it, it would just be about 2 minutes long.
Yeah,
and
so what we tell people is go to lightspeedmagazine.com.
Yep.
And there you can search for Brooke with an E, B-O-L-A-N-D-E-R, and you shall see. Actually, the first thing that comes up is an interview.
Yeah.
But if you click on that interview,
there's a link.
There's a link to both the prose of the story and Gabriel DeCure's reading of the story. They're both also, by the way, currently available in the Hour of the Wolf forum on Facebook by some strange coincidence.
Magic.
And also, if you want, you can go to Livestream and search for NYRSF, N-Y-R-S-F, as in the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, and then you will look for last November's reading, and that's Matt Kressel and Brooke Bollinger. And this coming Tuesday, April 5th, come to 388 Atlantic Avenue, here in Brooklyn, two floors beneath us right now. But don't let it be beneath you. It's going to be the launch. It's going to be the launch for Clockwork Phoenix, and a good time will be had by all.
I'll be there.
Good. And
will you be there?
Will you be there?
Always.
And Lara, your roommate?
I don't know.
Maker.
Mm.
Okay. Anyway, thank you all for listening. This has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Strange glances around the room. And tune in again next week from 1:33. I'll be on. I don't know that I have an agenda yet, but we'll find out. I have a few shows in the can as well. Stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn, Clapper with Lister coming your way. And please, everybody, this is the outro I use now, stolen from Stephen Fry. Be good to each other. Because we deserve it and you deserve it. I added that last word. Have a good morning and take care.
Tell me I'm wrong, or that's my right, and it's right in the Constitution. Yo, that's an illusion, huh, suckers. trying to change and rearrange. They said that I'm free, but they sure have a strange way of showing it. But I'm blowing the cover, the red, white, the blue, but the black for the brother. And I'm the lover of this flag, like many others take the same turn. Like me, they yearn for the flag too. Wake up to the lies, the pigs make up imperialistic swans that I grind into bacon bits. Call it bits cause I ain't taking. I'm not a Nazi or a Cappy or a Farmy, but you want me in prison cause I'm busy attacking. The flag, I ragging and snagging and dragging and rip it to shreds. Cause I'm too black, too strong, too red, too dread. And I'm dreaded cause I make the pigs tremble when I burn a symbol. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack, but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle Dandy. So just hand me a flag from the fastest and watch me burn that piece of to ashes. Cause the real meaning is what the masses must learn. That's why the red, white, and blue must burn, baby, burn.
remember I said with the last words on my lips, I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am
the bitch. The red, white, and blue spit on you.
Simultanea.
Whoa. Yeah, this is 1996.
Lord
of mercy. Not work. Whoa, but we'll whoa, make it work.
Yeah, yeah. It's not the first, not the last. So much pretty girl I pass. And holding out is such a task. That's why me, I said this from my heart. Oh Lord, don't let me cheat on my girlfriend. Cause as far as I can see, she loves only me. Oh Lord, don't let me cheat on my girlfriend. But Lord, if you can stop me from cheating, just don't let me get caught.
No, no, no.
Don't let me get caught.
No.
Don't let me get caught.
No, no,
so
no.
I hope I don't get caught. So listen to me now. It's such a sticky situation, yeah. Me promise my girl if you only look in her direction. But everywhere me turn, me see her next one.
Gosh.
And my body is too weak and I ball for attention. I only wanna give the girls what they want. My lady says I'm wrong, but she would understand. I don't wanna lie, but I don't want to cry. Yo, I'm so very weak inside. Oh Lord, don't let me cheat on my girlfriend. Cause as far as I can see, she loves only me. Oh Lord, don't let me cheat on my girlfriend. Please don't let me cheat. But Lord, if you can stop me from cheating,
yes, you.
Just don't let me get caught.
No, no.
Don't let me get caught.
No, no, no.
Don't let me get caught.
No, not at all.
I hope I don't get caught.
Please don't let you catch me, Lord.
You wanna like me, not try. I love my baby, but the girls, them still deep on my mind.
Boy.
It's unfair, I can't deny. Cause I couldn't bear to think about my lady and another guy.
Come on.
And yo, it's hard, yo, it's hard, yo, it's hard. If you have one girl, it's kinda rough to play the part.
Boy.
She would've left me if she knew what's in my thoughts. I hope I don't ever pay that cost. Oh, love, don't let me cheat on my girl.
Please don't let me cheat.
Cause as far as I can see, she loves only me. Oh Lord, don't let me cheat on my girlfriend.
Oh no.
But Lord, if you can stop me from cheating, just don't let me get caught.
Never ever.
Don't let me get caught.
Never ever.
Don't let me get caught.
Never ever catch me.
I hope I don't get caught. So listen to me now. She said, "Bun, she never make feet. Figure and can't get a straight craziness." So, when me sit down and me meditate, just can't make she know that she getting it. Now, one girl to a man, so we setting it. But for we have one girl, we keep forgetting it. Never get caught yet, we think we're making it. I hope we don't end up regretting it. Oh Lord, don't let me cheat on my girlfriend.
Please don't let me cheat.
Cause as far as I can see, she loves only me. Simultanea, whoa, Lord of mercy, whoa, whoa, hey, hey, yeah. It's not the first, not the last. So much pretty girl I pass, and holding out is such a task. That's why me I say this from my heart. Oh Lord, don't let me cheat on my girlfriend. Cause as far as I can see, she loves only me. Oh Lord, don't let me cheat on my girlfriend. But Lord, if you can stop me from cheating, just don't let me get caught.
No, no, no.
Don't let me get caught.
No.
Don't let me get caught.
No, no, no.
So I hope I don't get caught. So listen to me now. It's such a sticky situation, yeah.
Me
promise my girl if you only look
so
in her direction. But every time me turn, me see her next one.
And I'm
a body too weak and I'm
bad. Yeah, no say you're right.
Yeah.
She know me have me girl, and she have somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
She a jealous over me.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
She a jealous over me. She know me have me girl, and she have somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
She a jealous over me.
Yeah, yeah.
She a jealous over me. She said she no care for a man find out, and she no care.